Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Detroit Meets the Bard. I'm Sam White. I'm your designated host. Welcome back for another live edition of the podcast. We're so excited. I'm very excited today for today's guest. We have someone that I consider to be a kindred spirit here in Southeast Michigan. His name is Zane, officially Zane Ali Shamoon. So if you're looking for him on Facebook, that's how you find him. And he's with us today. He's an activist. He's a curator of stories. He's the founder or the co-founder of a movement called Narratives of Pain. He's a community organizer, and he's our guest today. So welcome, Zane. Welcome to the show. Thanks for being on with me.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk to you. So.
Yeah, so Zane, tell us about yourself. Give us a little background. What part of Michigan do you call home? Where'd you go to school? And what was the inspiration behind the Narratives of Pain?
Well, I was born in Royal Oak, but I lived in Warren, and then I lived in Novi for most of my life throughout my childhood. So that's, I guess, what I call home. But currently I live in Belleville, which is by the airport. I went to school at Michigan State. I went to school at Michigan State. So Lansing is also home to me because I was there for a decade doing a couple different degrees. And I went to school at Michigan State. And in terms of the last thing, the inspiration behind Narratives of Pain, well, I think so I'm a therapist. I went to school to become a marriage and family therapist. And I finished my master's in 2011. But way before that, when I was growing up in Novi, like I mentioned, it was right after 9/11, and it's a very economically homogenous place. And so you have this pressure, like you might get tokenized, you have to be like an excellent minority and don't cause a ruckus and maybe even make fun of your own culture sometimes, right? And it was one of those things. And I think, finding my own identity, I think one of my first therapies, one of my first outlets was telling my own story on a sheet of paper in front of me and confronting it. And then a level up is when you, find the courage to tell that story in front of somebody else. And I found that to be very healing. And I think it was a seed for me much later on, too. And I think the reason I'm bringing that up is because I don't see, it's the best way for me to describe narratives is that I don't see there to be a big distance between expression and healing. It's very hard for me to not see the other one if I see one of them. I see healing and expression together always. Even as a therapist, I practice something called experiential therapy, which is I want the clients that I work with to find their own story, their own way of looking at themselves that's empowering and healthier. And then not only for them to conceptualize it, but for them to see themselves, like actually physically see themselves do something that represents that, that maybe they didn't expect themselves to do. And so narratives is, something that was born out of that kind of thinking, I guess.
Yeah.
But that's,
So why do you think, that's kind of a really awesome segue into the next question that I have for you, because Zane, as we both know, and I've been to a couple of Narratives of Pain events, and they're phenomenal. So if you're listening, please find Narratives of Pain on Facebook, and we'll talk more about where you can find Narratives of Pain shortly. But as you and I both know, the world has changed a lot in only 2 weeks, Zane. In only 2 weeks,
yeah.
It's changed a lot. And how does that, because obviously Narratives of Pain didn't just start 2 weeks ago, but do you think the change in the world is going to impact Narratives of Pain? How has it changed the work that you do with Narratives of Pain? Because the administration has changed here in the United States and already has made such an incredible impact on our society. What do you think that means for Narratives of Pain?
Well, I think it means a lot of things. For me personally, if I'm frequenting conversations with people that care about telling stories, often they are already talking about how there's lack of access and there needs to be more places where we tell stories. I think everybody, like as a general public, we're more awake to that now, given the things that have been going on you know, since November, really. And people are afraid, up in arms, divisive, a lot of different things are going on. And I think that I'm realizing the place of service that something like Narrative of the Pain has. That testimony is not something that we should just trivialize or take for granted. It's something that can really help people just find a way to heal personally and also find a way to gather. And Narrative tries to do both. It's, you know, you can have your own individual healing sessions, right? But you can also come together as community and say we're going to hold each other together and tell some really vulnerable stories. I think the other role that I think it plays is that there's two ways to defeat people. Usually this sort of paraphrasing this lesson that I learned when I was learning about like uncovering history, right? Like outside of Euro-American history in college, you start learning all these things and you're like, what? Like, man, the schools are jacked. Like, I learned that there's two ways to commit genocide over a people. One is to kill them physically. And then two is to eradicate their history.
Yeah.
Right.
Wow.
And so there's also, the sort of rebuttal to that is that if there's at least one of you that's here that carries a tradition, that means that somebody in your ancestry refused to die. What I'm sort of bringing up is, at least somebody did. And so what I'm sort of bringing up here is that narratives, it tackles that second part, right? Is that if our stories are told, they're here, they're real, and those aren't being taken, you're not going to take that from us. You know, I take that from people who, even if, you know, and Narratives doesn't have a, it's like, it doesn't have a political tone, but it also can't not, right? Because people are telling their stories, right? And people are disenfranchised or they're going through a hard time or they're scared for their loved ones or their, you know, loved ones overseas or whatever it is. You know, standing unapologetically, this is what I'm hurting about and this is what I'm trying to, you know, grow through and telling a story about it in some fashion unapologetically to a group of people and feeling safe about doing that. It makes a statement. It makes a statement that you're not going to, you know, you're not going to let your heart be taken away.
Zane, you're giving me so many gems. I'm trying to make sure the audience can hear all of this because I'm learning so much. And I have to say, one of the things that I love so much about Narratives of Pain is that when I'm sitting in the audience, one of my favorite things to do is to look around, because it's one of those rare things where when you come to a Narratives of Pain event, and I'm just telling people who are listening this, one of the most beautiful things about it is the diversity of stories and the inclusive audience. So you have these inclusive storytellers, but the audience too, because you have Black and Brown people, people of all faiths, people of all economic situations and circumstances sitting together. And how rare and beautiful is that? And you know, and I think one of the words that one of my theater partners and I, Emilio, we really don't like the word diversity because we think that people have misused the word over time. So inclusive is the word that we prefer nowadays. And I wanted to ask you, Zane, what does the word inclusive mean to you, and why is inclusivity important?
I think inclusiveness to me means, like, you know, if it's used right, you know, because words can be used wrong, like you had mentioned. If it's used right, if it's used with I think it should mean giving people of different walks of life a safe place to gather. That at least, you know, that's what, sort of how I think about it. I don't know. I think it's important. I think it's important because there are, I mean, a lot of really bad, poisonous ways of thinking and ways of treating other people are pervasive when we don't have experiences to gather, when we don't have experiences to sort of just be around each other in each other's presence. So what somebody standing in front of you, when you're sitting with them, what it does, it humanizes them. We have a natural instinct to find compassion with the people that we sit next to. When you refuse to sit next to people, then you can operate with your prejudices. Now, let me go a little bit further, because I think I see that puts a, that makes it seem like there's camps, right? There's like people who are inclusive and people who are not. I think there's also people who are inclusive, but they sort of undermine that inclusivity by creating a patronizing relationship with the people they're sitting next to.
Okay, what does that mean?
That,
exactly, what do you mean?
Let me see. Okay. I don't want to get too lost in my train of thought, but for me, inclusivity, when it's used right, is about safety. Now, obviously, when people are not being included, they're being outcasted, that is not safe, right? They're not giving access
right.
to spaces that everybody has, right? So, like, not being included at a school or not giving access at a job, like, makes sense, right? It makes your life less safe, less prosperous, right, in a practical sense. That's easy to catch. But then there's another threat to inclusivity, which is that when people are together, there's always a centering on people who have power in order for them to sit with the people who don't. So like
oh,
what?
That's big.
Like hijacked. Like what is it called? Okay, so like I once heard like during. And I'm not a historian, but you know this is something that I find to have been a pattern. Is that, like, during the Black Panther movement, there are a lot of white folks who said, hey, like, I want to be here, and I also want to, like, be given a really central role.
Mm.
And it's like, you know, it comes out of the pretense of, like, okay, so if the cameras aren't on, and if you aren't going to be praised, would you be here? I had a friend once tell me something like this. I had a friend once tell me that he went to a rally for a culture other than his own. And he went there, he's a white guy, he went there and he said, man, you know, I really care about this cause, but it was just so uncomfortable for me, and so I don't think I'll be going back to something like this. And I'm like, wow, like, you know, if somebody's lives are uncomfortable and that's what they're on the streets for, like, you had a personal encounter and now you're done? Like, it just, like, that to me undermines inclusivity at its core as well, because it's not unconditional, right? It's conditioned on power dynamics. So, like, if these power dynamics, which are hurtful, are allowed to still be pervasive, then I'll show up.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
You know,
okay. I have to pull that out of the conversation, because I want people to hear that one thing you just said about inclusivity being unconditional. That is super powerful. I've actually never heard anybody express inclusivity that way. May I steal that, Zane? Can I use that? That's so true.
You can definitely steal that.
That's
and
so true.
Let me say this too. I don't mean to cut you off, but I feel like also there are times when it's okay to be in separate spaces for safety. The goal should always be safety. For example, like a women's lounge. Right, when you have a campus like Michigan State, for example, where it's got some high rates of assault and there's certain parts of campus that are a little bit dangerous or whatnot, to have a space where people can go just for some momentary refuge, it makes sense. That's not a lack of inclusivity. That's like responding to apparent needs of the public. And a lot of times, though, when you have that like sort of conditioned inclusivity, people show up and they're like, what about a men's space? What about a white channel? Like, they just, and it's like, because your inclusivity is never threatened. That's why.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah. That makes perfect sense. And
You need sincerity, you need safety, and you need that sort of unconditional compassion. If those things are forfeited, then the core of inclusivity is forfeited. And everything else is just wrapping paper. Just looks good, but it's not real.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, Zane, that's so powerful, and you're so right. And, again, I go back to what I enjoy most about Narratives of Pain is sitting in that audience with such an inclusive group of folks. I mean, everybody is there, and we all feel safe, I would say, anytime I've been to a Narratives of Pain event. And I have to ask you, though, there was recently the University of Virginia, a few months ago, maybe longer than that, they released a racial dot map of Michigan, and it turns out that Michigan is one of the most segregated states in our country. There's a lot of disconnect between communities, and even in Southeast Michigan, you know, you have this side of town where there's, you know, black people, this side of town where you have a Mexican population, this side of town where you have the Arab population. It's very segmented and discriminated, but it's a very segregated neck of the woods in the United States of America, this Michigan that we both live in. And that's why I love Narratives of Pain so much. Why do you think it's important to have events and things to bridge those gaps like Narratives of Pain? Why do these sects or these groups that typically don't interact with one another need to come together? What does that do for the state as a whole, do you think?
Yeah. I realize I never summarized what Narratives of Pain's like primary function is. I hope it's like being implied in our conversation, but I apologize. I kind of glossed over that.
Give it to us.
Narratives of Pain is a storytelling showcase that has therapeutic goals. So it's about healing through the witnessing and telling of stories. And there are featured storytellers who are selected beforehand. Well, not really selected. They are said, hey, we would like to use the space. And then we feature some of those people who are about to be brave about something they're going through. We've had storytellers talk about their own experiences of rape, domestic violence, being sold as a child bride, basically. We've had people talk about discrimination, being tokenized. We've had people talk about homelessness. Somebody, you know, was bad to their family, false incarceration. We had everything. And over the past 2 years, and people can tell their stories in any which way they want. They can tell it through poetry, testimony. They can tell it through music. And it's not performance-based because then it would be a concert. And it's the main character trait of Narratives that makes it different than an open mic is that it's you are there to entertain your own therapy. Like, you're there for yourself. You're there for yourself, and everybody witnesses. Looks like, you know, you're doing something and the audience is listening, but you're actually there talking to yourself in a way, and everybody else is witnessing. And then, of course, there's an impact that is had for the audience as well. To answer your question about Michigan, what it can do for Michigan, very segregated, I'd like to say that I think that phenomena, it exists everywhere, right? Like in the U.S.
Yeah.
Seattle's really segregated, even though it has a high minimum wage. Let's go to the Bay Area and look at Oakland and San Francisco. More locally, Detroit, Grosse Pointe, Flint, Carmen Ainsworth, Lansing, East Lansing. Like, you know, it's like you can see a better life down the road, but you're here. You know, it's kind of segregation.
Yeah.
And now I'm really worried about Detroit, because Detroit has had a lot of economic needs and need for growth, and I'm really worried that the expansion of Midtown and all this kind of stuff, you know, I've never seen gentrification actually pan out to help people who are the most disenfranchised in the city. I usually just see like housing prices go up, and people just have to be like scooted out, you know. The question being like, what can narratives do when all that kind of stuff is going on, when all that segregation is going on, is like, well, Narratives is committed to going to different cities. So we've been to Dearborn a couple times just because we're trying to, you know, ride the germination of a new nonprofit. We kind of kept going towards places we knew. And also, Narratives was born out of the Muslim community, even though it's not for the Muslim community. That is obviously a group of people that contains a lot of diversity economically and racially that needs to tell stories, right? There's a lot of intersections there. I happen to be Muslim, but it's not for that. But I think like what it does, and when we go to different cities as well, it provides an opportunity for everybody to gather. I got a story to tell because I'm recovering from alcoholism. I got a story to tell because I'm a survivor of relationship violence. I got a story to tell because I'm scared right now in this political climate. I got a story to tell because my mom's a refugee, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, you find people that are just being brave. And it goes back to that earlier point that not only when you sit with somebody does it increase compassion, but when you see somebody's humanity and the struggle they're going through, there's no opinions to be had about that. It doesn't matter what aisle you're on, you know, whatever. It's just somebody's heart being shared. And that's the main part. We just want people to feel valid about their feelings and about what they're going through, and that they know that they're supported and that they're supporting themselves, and everyone saw that happen. And I think that you do some more stuff like that, people will show up, you know?
I agree.
I want people to show up when the cameras are off. Yeah.
That's right. And speaking of people, because you never talk about yourself, and I always, as somebody who produces and who curates, I have to ask you what inspires you, and what allows you or gives you the energy to keep going, Zane, in a world that can make it very difficult to be authentic. How do you do that? What inspires you to keep going?
I don't know. I think, the easy for narratives itself, the easy answer, here I am again deflecting from myself. For narratives itself, the motivation comes from the team, right? If you're tired one day and you're like, can I do this anymore? You wake up, you go, and you see somebody else is still ready to go. It's kind of like, you're ever studying for a class and you're like, I'm not going to study. But you just put yourself next to somebody who's ready to go to study. And then you look up and they're doing their work. So then it gives you permission to go back and, just do your best with yours. You got to put people next to you. You got to put sincere people next to you in life. It goes a long way. Yeah. Just like make them people you have to deal with during your week. Like that's something. Also, I try to put boundaries down. I wasn't always good at this, and I don't know if this is your experience as well. But when you're trying to curate something, you often think about, okay, what can I do to set this up for another person? Problem is, if you do that, you'll get tired. It's like if you have a ship of water and you're trying to take it to a community, but you never drink any of it yourself, so you get dehydrated, you pass out, and you can't deliver the water anymore. So I'm learning that, self-care, and I'm not talking about like self-care gelato or like self-care the color of my car. I'm talking about for real, you just put boundaries on your basic needs. Do I eat when I need to eat? Do I sleep when I need to sleep? Do I spend time with people that make me feel safe? Because I got to get re-energized. I've committed to the community that I'm going to do X, Y, and Z for them. And to honor that, I need to also take care of myself.
That's a really important note for producers, because often, and I wanted to ask you that question because you aren't always necessarily the person that we see on stage. You might go and say something briefly, but I don't think people really understand the work that goes into curating these stories and to keep the movement going. And so I had to ask you, how do you sustain yourself? And thank you for that really honest and open answer, because a lot of people who create things often, they leave out the most important resource, and that's themselves.
Yeah.
And that's an easy way, like you said, to burn out. I can't miss this question. If someone wants to share their story at the next Narratives of Pain, what do they do, Zane? What do they do?
They can go online to they can find our Facebook. They can also message me through that or message us through that. They can also email me. I can give you my email. Zane.shmoon87@gmail.com. 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 And people can just talk to me. I mean, the process of the Future of Storytellers is I want people to know that the place is both vulnerable and safe at the same time. Like any growth.
Yeah.
Vulnerable and safe at the same time. And I want them to know that before the show. Sometimes I like people to gather beforehand, but it's never forced. Nothing in narratives is imposed. Even if a feature storyteller gets to the show and they're like, oh, man, the wrong person's in the room, and it would be very triggering for me to tell the story in front of them, they don't have to. They can just call it quits there. It's about empowering the autonomy of the person who's going through a challenge. So we try to start that process way beforehand. So if somebody emailed me, I'm going to email them back right away. We're going to start having conversations. They never have to send me their work. I don't check it or police it or in any way. Mm-hmm. But, I want people to know that the people who are setting up the space, such as myself, are going to honor them. And I want them to know that as soon as they contact me. And I think that prepares people to be brave before the show ever happens.
And they find you again on Facebook. Where Narratives of Pain is where you can find Zane on Facebook. And if you want to follow Zane, then again, Zane, Z-A-I-N, Ali Shamoon. You can follow him on Facebook there. Any other social media channels you want to shout out? Are you on Twitter? Are you on Instagram, Zane? Where else can they find you? I don't want to miss anything in case somebody needs to, to tell their story.
Our Twitter is in the works right now, and our website's coming out soon, so that's something to look out for. Eventually in a month or two here, you'll be able to just Google Narrative of Pain to find us. But right now, Facebook, that's pretty much it. You can find me or Narrative of Pain on Facebook, and you can find me on Twitter, same name, Zane Ali Shamoon.
And I want to reiterate, if you're someone who doesn't, if you're not necessarily ready to tell a story and you just want to go to an event, the spirit of the event and just being in the audience is an experience within itself. I can vouch for that as a person who has sat in the audience. So if you haven't been to a Narratives of Pain event, please make it on your list for 2017, because I promise you it's going to be one of the most uplifting, comfortable, safe, inspirational experiences you're going to have this year. And we all need it more now than we ever have. So make sure you do that. Zane, thank you for joining me this afternoon on the podcast. I really appreciate your time. You're a fantastic person
I appreciate the opportunity to talk about these things. You know, it's another act of self-care for me, so that's good.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you for the listening audience for listening to Detroit Meets the Bard, and we'll catch you next Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Have a wonderful day. Bye-bye.
Thank you.